race in Shanghai begins in five lights time. The Chinese Grand Prix is underway, and Max Verstappen gets the launch he needs to chop across Sergio Perez. Fernando Alonso, does he feel brave to sweep around the outside of the Mexican driver? Gets the jump at the moment. Is the grip there? Alonso's being really brave, but the grip runs out. He's got the inside line. He's got second position. He moves past Perez as Verstappen holds the lead. But look at the traction that Alonso's got fighting the car. It is Verstappen, Alonso, then Perez. We're on board with fourth place, Lando Norris.
Alonso was working so hard to bring those tyres to life on the warm-up lap, and it's paid off. The commitment and confidence he had around the outside of turn one was staggering. Thought he was going to have a look at P1 for a minute as well.
Oh, that really, really was an aggressive start by the driver in the green Aston Martin, Lando Norris, chasing down Perez. Perez did not enjoy racing in the pack earlier on. And if you're thinking, who's that in the Haas? That is Nico Hülkenberg, up two places. A poor getaway for both Ferraris. Leclerc down to eighth, Sainz down to ninth. The team's trying to get the tyres up to temperature, trying to make overtakes, as we see now a big opportunity for Charles Leclerc trying to make amends for losing places off the line, and he makes the pass into turn 14, gets past Hülkenberg, who's down to 8th.
Sainz trying to come with him as well. Hülkenberg on the inside into the final corner. That'll compromise his exit, and Sainz could do with clearing the Haas as soon as possible, maybe into turn 1 here.
Let's see, he pulls out of the slipstream, building up to 200 miles per hour. DRS is now enabled, but Sainz didn't have to wait for it. Hülkenberg knows his fight is not with the cars from Maranello.
Looks like Alonso's pushing their tyres on lots harder than us. This is good.
It is good news. Will there be any defence offered by Fernando Alonso, or does he have to think about the long game? And Sergio Perez powers by and retakes second place in the Grand Prix. So, here we go, with the young British driver, Lando Norris, trying to get past the oldest driver in the field, Fernando Alonso, focusing on the race again, park it on the apex. He tried that on the lap to the grid, and Lando Norris takes third place. This is so important for Leclerc to try and make the pass early using one of the DRS zones. How brave is Leclerc feeling? Now that move isn't done yet, but Leclerc makes the pass, shuts the door, and takes the long way round to take sixth place. There's an opportunity now for the Ferrari. That was late to pull out of the slipstream, but that's another position gained for the man from Monaco. Through goes Charles Leclerc. He's up to fifth, and he's going chasing Fernando Alonso. Here's our race leader, Max Verstappen, all by himself. As Perez comes in, fact, he's so far ahead, Red Bull can double stack, not even worry about it. That is so impressive from Red Bull. 2.1 and 2 second stops back to back. Problem for Valtteri Bottas. He'd been having a good weekend. He was challenging for the points, but still, he can't find his way to the top 10.
Thankfully for Norris, he will take the 8-second benefit that you get for pitting under the VSC. 15-second loss instead of a 23.
And the full safety car is out. They cannot move that car due to this man's retirement. And into the pits we come with Max Verstappen, and Perez has been called in. Red Bull will have to double stack once again.
Perez is going to lose track position here.
So through goes Norris up to second place. It will change for you on the left-hand side. And Perez drops down. Now, Alonso comes into the pits. Can Leclerc get out before the Mexican driver? Can he get to that safety car line? I think he's going to do it. And he gets past. So it's Verstappen, Norris, and Charles Leclerc as Perez rejoins. Here we go. Lock up for everyone. Oh, contact at the back between Stroll and I think Ricciardo. As Max Verstappen. Yeah, Hülkenberg moves up. Ricciardo moves down. It was a mess at the hairpin. The green flag flies once again at Shanghai International. And it's a great restart for Verstappen. This was at the hairpin. Oh, that is ridiculous. That is a huge hit into the back of Daniel Ricciardo for Stroll, who then had to pit. This is what it looked like on board. They just clobbered him. So Stroll, who was hoping to return to the points today and had a good... Oh, spin in the background for one of the V-carbs. And there you go. Oh, that is so disappointing for Yuki Tsunoda, who is pulling off. And will that require more intervention? That car looks like it's in trouble at the back. Magnussen on board. We've seen that before. There is the contact damage to the front left for Magnussen. Puncture, maybe more for Yuki Tsunoda. This is on board the Japanese driver. And this was against Carlos Sainz. And that's the soft tyre in full operating. Well, it caused chaos, but once he fired it up, it's a very effective tyre and he got past Sainz. Take two. This time the pass for Stroll, who's able to get past. Magnussen leaves a wheel in and they somehow make their way round the corner. Stroll leaves the widest berth possible. And this is really, really great battling for the last place on the road, because Daniel Ricciardo has come into the pits and we're scrapping all the way through the order. But Stroll in the green Aston Martin and Magnussen finding himself back ahead for the time being is as you were into the hairpin. Or is it late lunchtime now for the Canadian driver? Gets to the apex first. Will that be the pass? Oh, they're treating us to some great battling through this one. Magnussen doesn't want to give the place up and they'll still continue this journey. And I've got to bring you in now.
This is our new Villeneuve, Dijon, isn't it? A lap of wheel-to-wheel action, swapping places every corner. Here comes Magnussen again around the outside.
And this time, Stroll's elbow is out to claim the place. And this is the move for Perez, trying to get past Charles Leclerc. Can Leclerc place the Ferrari in order to fight back? It's going to be close between these two. Side by side they go. No, Perez gets ahead. Alonso can take that soft tyre no further. And they felt the need to roll the dice, but it's not paid off. These two were not on the friendliest terms. Former teammates by the end of their time together, and Alonso will have to make the move as quickly as possible. Man, that is a quick direction change. And that is as quickly as possible. And it will not be a contest with fresh tyres. With DRS, he ceded the place to get rid of the softs. He put on the medium tyres and another place gained by Fernando Alonso, who goes after Lewis Hamilton, who's up 10 places at the moment. Oh, he nearly dropped it from the gravel and did a Carlos Sainz from yesterday. Alonso so nearly into the barrier and out of the race.
How has he done that?
42 years of age, but still providing box office moments. Fernando Alonso past Lewis Hamilton and up to eighth. It could have all been over a few corners ago. To the hairpin, turn 14. Another position gained and up to seventh position. For the first time in his career, Max Verstappen crosses the line to take victory in Shanghai. His 58th Formula One win, and he has destroyed the field once more. The Dutchman leads home Lando Norris. Two Red Bulls on the podium thanks to Sergio Perez.
This is the Outlap F1 Podcast featuring America's own Cody, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap. What is up, Outlap F1 Nation? This will be season 6. This will be episode number 11? 12. I didn't update that. So there, we're off to a flying start. This is the 2024 Chinese GP race review. You've got Andy, and I'm along with Cody tonight. We had thoughts of a potential full boat show, at which point I had all sorts of boat horns ready to go in the sound bar here. But alas, Deanna is literally stuck in the air. Her flight got delayed, so we wish her safe travels. And just want her to get home all good and all safe. So it's just me and Cody tonight. But Cody, my man, how do you enjoy the late night, early morning, and how you doing otherwise?
I thought it was going to be brutal, and it was a little at the end. I ended up, you know, kind of being wishy-washy with my plans, thought I was going to watch it in the morning, then thought I was going to nap and get up for the race. And I ended up just, you know, doing my college thing and staying up playing video games until it was time. And I did make it to the end barely. But yeah, it was a little rough the next day, but it all ended up being worth it. I think I'd much rather watch it live.
No, totally agree. It was definitely, I would say that the show overall was actually worth staying up for at as late as it was or as early as it was. And we'll hop into all that in just a little bit. But if you found us, first and foremost, welcome. Welcome along. You can find our show, as always, Twitter or X, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and, of course, YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle for all of that. You can see our link tree in our show notes. You can see our link tree on any of the social media apps. You can do us a solid if you like what you're seeing and you enjoy what you're hearing. If you're on YouTube, you can click smash the subscribe button or click the like button if you're so inclined. If you're on your favorite podcasting app, you can leave us a 5-star review. Just as a general reminder, we are on our new Apple Podcast thread. If you were on Apple Podcasts before and you can't find our new stuff, all you have to do is search out for the show again, find the new thread, like and subscribe to that one, and then you're all good. If you don't feel like doing that, just go to our link tree. It'll take you right to it. That's the easy way, one stop, and you're all good there. You can email the show, chatnow@outlapf1.com. I'm going to stop talking about the website for a long time, but it'll come back when it does. And as general, thank you. Outlap F1 Nation, thank you so much for stepping up. Continuous monetary support, and we love all of you. So special thank you to Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of the hashtag Outlap F1 Nation and get our shout out every episode, you get it for free. This is what you get. You can leave us $1, $5. All goes into making the show better. All goes into investing in new equipment, upgrading the equipment we already have, and trying to make our product a little bit better for you, the listener. Final reminder, you can check out the good folks at Manscaped. You can get 20% off and free shipping with our code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP if you are inclined to shop for those types of products. All right. Cody, my man, what do we have for a headline of the day?
I didn't have great inspiration for a headline of the day, so I'm going to go with that I stayed awake barely, and that is a signal that this race was at least decent, because if it was going to be a stinker, I would have been out cold by like lap 20. Overall, I thought it was a fun weekend. It was good to be back at the, you know, seeing the track in China. I thought the sprint, at least at the very end, even turned out to be pretty fun and interesting. And we ended up, you know, seeing some mix-ups, some drivers in places we didn't expect. And yeah, overall, thought it was a decent race.
Yeah, mine is kind of in the same vein as yours, believe it or not, and it's not a bad show for 3 a.m. local. You could watch a lot worse, actually, at 3 in the morning, and I was glad that I actually managed to get through the whole thing live. And my other headline is, boy, oh boy, my boy Lando, giving me the full run of emotions all weekend. He's good, he's bad, he's okay, and then he's good again. Wow. Literally all of it in the course of just 3 days. But anyway, we will get into all that. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, we will get you all caught up on that in just a second. So we will start back all the way to Friday. We will start with the sprint qualifying because that's how they did it. So we're going to take you through all the sessions that had impact on the weekend. The first one was the sprint qualifying. So we will start that with going out in P20 in Q1 of the sprint qualifying was the number two of Logan Sargeant. P19 was Yuki Tsunoda. P18 was Alex Albon, so no Williams out of Q1 here. P17, Esteban Ocon. P16 was Pierre Gasly. P15 was Lance Stroll. P14 was Daniel Ricciardo. P13 was Nico Hülkenberg. P12 was Kevin Magnussen. And P11 was George Russell. The top 10 from 10 to 1. This is a rain-affected session, so this is a little bit mixed up than what you would expect. P10, he made it in Q3 in the sprint. That wasn't our prediction, though. So we didn't get any points for that. But Zhao Guanyu, way to go, man. Making Q3 in the sprint qualifying. P9 was Valtteri Bottas. P8 was Oscar Piastri. P7 was Charles Leclerc. P6 was Sergio Perez. P5 was Carlos Sainz. P4 was Max Verstappen. P3 was Fernando Alonso. P2, Lewis Hamilton. And in P1, master of the changeable tricky conditions, 157.940 sees Lando Norris in the McLaren. All right, Cody, big thoughts on the sprint quali.
I did like that the rain mixed it up a little bit because, you know, it's no fun when Max Verstappen's going to win everything and he's starting from the front all the time. So it was pretty exciting to see Lando and Lewis Hamilton qualifying for the front row for the sprint. You know, I haven't seen stuff like that in a little while. It did get thrown a little bit for a loop there when Lando's lap time got deleted and then reinstated. So we were kind of wondering who was actually going to be on pole there for a few minutes. But it was good that his lap got reinstated. I guess just maybe a small mistake on the stewards' parts. But I thought it was a pretty exciting session. I don't actually, here I am doing a podcast with you here, and I feel like my fandom might be slightly tarnished by the fact that I don't usually tune in for sprint qualifying. But I probably should have for this one because it looked like it was actually a pretty cool session.
Yeah, I mean, the first two were pretty much straightforward, and I would say the big headline out of that, we talked about in our preview episode how we both, at least I, thought McLaren were not going to do very well. That got kind of blown away, actually, believe it or not, in the practice. All of a sudden, I'm looking and they're like, first sector times are really good. Their second sector times are really good. Their third sector times ain't too bad. So it was like, wow, like they went into the weekend thinking damage limitation, and here they are. They easily made Q3. Then we get the start of the rain. And the rain came, and the rain came in enough time in between when Q2 ended. Actually, it started, believe it or not, in Q2. Everybody got one run in Q2 on dries, and then the rain opened, then the skies opened up. And that meant that George Russell, who gets caught out because he tried to set one fast lap, it was okay, but then could not set a second flyer. So that was the end of his run there. Then everybody goes out in Q3 on inters. And meanwhile, the rain actually got really wet. Like it was almost actually by the end of that session, drivers were saying almost full wets. And when do you ever hear that? Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So as the track continues to deteriorate, meanwhile, it's this new surface. It's this new surface that's got all this lack of grip on it anyway. And drivers are just ice skating all over. Verstappen mm-hmm. goes off. Alonso goes off. Hamilton goes off. Lando goes off not once on one lap, but twice, as it turns out. And then we get, the final lap. He puts it on pole. He's 2 seconds faster than everybody. And then all of a sudden my heart drops because I watch hit the name drop on the timing board from first to ninth. And I'm like, no, where did he go off? Because I watched that entire lap. I'm like, okay, I got the lap before he went off twice. That lap was not going to count. But I'm like, what the hell? Where did he go off? And then he's even asking, where did I go off? And all of a sudden then, like rising from the ashes, the name pops right back up on the top of the board. And then I'm like, what? That's just, you never see that. So here's the ruling. Here's what the computer did. Here's what the humans did, because it's basically human override. So the rule in some circuits with respect to going off in the last sector or the last corner, i.e. this would apply in places like Abu Dhabi, Austria, places where if you go off all four wheels on the last corner, you not only lose the lap where you go off, but you then lose the next lap. Now, in most qualifying sessions, that really isn't material. Why? Because you're setting a fast lap, and then you're usually slowing back down. The exception is when it's raining out, you're running continuous laps. So Lando runs what he thinks is a hot lap. He goes off, gets to the final corner, he goes four wheels off, he goes into the gravel, but then he continues on doing another hot lap because he still had time on the clock. So the original ruling was, since he did that, that was what led to the deletion. That was the computer doing it. Now, you have to read the race director's notes, and it is at the discretion of the race director for which circuit that rule applies to. It did not apply here. If you look at the last turn, turn 16, there's a gravel trap. There's no way to get an advantage. So if you go four wheels off, you're at a disadvantage. That's why they reinstated it as quick as they did. They didn't program the computer right with the right race director's notes. That's why it fell, and that's why it came back. Now, that is confusing as all hell to try to explain that to a fan.
Really confusing, yeah.
I had to research it like 3 different times. And sure enough, I went back and looked at the FIA doc spot. It's not there. There was some really good reporting by some people who were there. Luke Smith had it. Chris Medlin had it. I put out a tweet on our social media about it that said this was probably the best explanation that I could find as to what actually happened and why it did. And meanwhile, of course, because anything involved Lewis Hamilton means social media goes insano everybody kind of had a meltdown. We haven't had a Twitter F1 Twitter meltdown yet this year, and here was the first chance to go see one. So that's why it happened the way that it did. That's what I was able to find. Cody, your thoughts on it?
I can kind of understand why that rule would be there, because if you're coming out of the last turn, your next lap, you know, if you're doing continuous laps like that, your next lap could be highly influenced by how you exit to that last turn, because you're pretty much always starting on a straight, and how you come out of that last turn is going to affect your speed down that straight, and, you know, could have a pretty significant impact on that next lap time. So I can see why it's there. I can see why it's only there some of the time, because like you said, here in China, there's a gravel trap here at that last turn. If you break track limits there, you're doing absolutely nothing to help your time. You're hurting it because you're in the gravel trap. You're lucky if you're still going to be going straight after that. So I can kind of understand the discretion there as well. But in the moment, and hearing you explain the rules, it definitely comes across as being very confusing. I'm happy it worked out for him. And with how everyone else was looking during qualifying there, you were lucky to still be on the track in that last turn anyway. So I'm happy that they, for a change, had common sense prevail and were like, you know, it's really not giving him any advantage here. We're gonna put that back.
And they did it with enough time to where, I mean, I saw some people were like, well, and then the race engineer would tell Lewis to slow down because he thought he was safe. I go, no race engineer worth anything is telling anybody anything until the checkered flag, until they cross the line, because the drivers mm-hmm. needed max concentration. You would only do that if it was like a Q2 versus Q3 type deal and you thought everybody was safe. And even then, if you're a race engineer that's worth anything in those conditions, you're waiting for your driver to cross the line and then we'll deal with the fallout, if any. So that theory, I saw that a few times pop up. I'm like, that doesn't hold anything. But anyway, that's the rule. That's why it went off the way that it did. Hopefully the next time the FIA will program the computer correctly. All right, so we'll move on into that sprint. Here's our sprint results. P20, he did not finish. We will have to talk about his race. That was Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin. P19 was Nico Hülkenberg. P18, Logan Sargeant. P17, Alex Albon. P16, Yuki Tsunoda. P15, Pierre Gasly. P14, Lance Stroll. P13 was Esteban Ocon. P12 was Valtteri Bottas. P11 was Daniel Ricciardo. P10 was Kevin Magnussen. P9, just missing out on the ever-elusive point for Kick Sauber. That was Zhou Guanyu. P8, now the points finishers. P8 was George Russell. P7 was Oscar Piastri. P6 was Lando Norris. P5, Carlos Sainz. P4, Charles Leclerc. P3, Sergio Checo Perez. P2, Lewis Hamilton. And in P1, that was Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. He got clean air and poof, gone. All right, so big thoughts on the sprint. Cody, I'll let you go first.
Got a lot of thoughts on the sprint. First thoughts on the sprint was 90% of it was pretty boring, in my opinion. There was 10% that was really banging, but most of that sprint was pretty slow because they ended up getting a pretty good DRS train going there from third place down for most of that sprint. And you had your excitement right at the beginning because, and I'm sure you're going to give all the good deets on this, but, and your emotions through this, but yeah, Lando Norris pretty much blowing that pole in the very first turns, goes a little wide, trying to hang out with Lewis Hamilton and ends up dropping down several places. A few laps later, Max looks like maybe he's struggling to get caught up to Lewis, but ends up being that he was having a battery issue that was quickly resolved. And once he got past Lewis Hamilton, like you said, he was just gone. It was pretty frightening how much of a gap he was able to open up in a sprint where we're only at 30% race distance. And he managed to finish 13 seconds out in front of Lewis. But yeah, that DRS train made it pretty boring up until the very end when everyone decided they were going to try to make their moves. And I thought that was pretty exciting. It's really too bad it resulted in Fernando Alonso not finishing the sprint, not getting any points for what had been, you know, up until the very end there, a very strong performance for the sprint. But yeah, it ended up getting pretty crazy between him and Sainz and Leclerc and Perez, and Perez ends up winning out on that and manages to get all the way up to P3. So pretty much best he could do after being held up, and that gap between Lewis Hamilton and everyone else opening up so wide.
Yeah, I mean, I think your two big points are the two big talking points of the entire 19 laps, because I think you pretty much summarized it very well. So I'll give you kind of my take on the lap one. So Lando and Lewis is on the inside, Lando on the outside. Didn't get that, only I think a hundredth of a second late off the line, actually. So it didn't look as bad as I thought it did. And I was on Lando's onboard, obviously. And I thought for a minute he was okay. And then he clears him. I thought he cleared Lewis, but he didn't. And then all of a sudden you see the front wing pop into your shot. And I'm like, ah, shit, he's there. And as soon as he's there, in my head, I'm screaming, just let him go. Just let him go. You're quicker than him. And instead, Lando's trying to hang this out on the outside because he knows that if he can get to turn three, he then has the inside position, and he thinks he's going to be able to do the same move that Lewis is trying to do to Lando, but Lando literally runs out of room. One, Lewis did the right thing and kind of guided him off, which is exactly what I've said many times. That's racing. So I have no issue with the move that Lewis did there. That's exactly what you should do in that situation. And if you're Lando there, dude, you're racing a Mercedes. You know you're quicker than them. You have to know that you're quicker than them. And it's like, this is...
It's so weird to say that.
At least right now. I mean, we'll get to the points.
It's a Mercedes. They're slower.
We're going to get to the end of the point, end of this, and we're going to look at the point standings, and I'm going to tell you that that's true. Because it's like... They have this inferiority complex sometimes, and Lando has it too, where it's like, if I don't make this stick right now, I'm done, and there's no chance of it winning. Well, you tried to hang it out on the outside, and you exactly did what you exactly thought was going to happen. Your worst case scenario came true. He runs off into the oh, thank God there was some sort of a surface out there. It's not gravel, but if it's gravel, I think he might have been done, but. There was something out there that he ran over, but then he hops back on the track. He's in front of his teammate. And then you're right. Yeah, he just got in that DRS train, and that was pretty much it. Even if you had pace, you could not do anything with it. For most of them, until we got that big kerfuffle over P3 between Alonso, Sainz, Leclerc, and Perez, who decided to finally just give us all the show we'd been like yearning for the longest time. Why? They couldn't pit anymore for tires, and there were only three laps left. So why not at least go at it and do something? A miracle that there wasn't more damage. I'm thinking like somebody's going to wreck their race. And it turned out it was Fernando, and through kind of no fault of his own, it was just an unlucky puncture. Somebody's front wing clipped his rear tire, and that's what forced him off. He ends up having to be the only driver that pitted, and then they just said, we'll just stay here. There's no point in going back out. And that was the end of his race. So that was fun to watch. It was kind of a shame Lando couldn't get in on that, but he was just a little bit too far back to get in on that. But Ferrari, this is the first time we've seen Carlos Sainz, the wild card, no drive for next year still. Still keep harping on that till I see something change on that, which means he doesn't have to answer to anything for anybody. Him and Leclerc made contact. Leclerc was not happy about it. Did not enjoy that at all, was one Charles Leclerc. And it just led that collision makes Sergio Perez just, oh, look what I found. Whoop, goodbye. So that was actually the most entertaining part of the sprint. And then you mentioned the guy at the front. Once Verstappen figured out whatever that issue was, car locked in, gets to Lewis in P1 and just goes around him, and then poof, gone. That thing got clean air and good night and 13 seconds in five laps.
It's like you found the ignition switch for the boosters.
It was like, yeah. Oh, I was hitting the go slow button and I forgot the go fast button was over here. Let me hit this one. My gosh. I mean, it just made the whole rest of the field just look terrible. But, actually a fairly entertaining sprint for what it was. So at this point of the weekend, I was happy. I was thrilled for the pole. Now I'm down in the dumps. I'm like, don't talk to me. I didn't want to talk to anybody for a half an hour after the race ended. I basically stayed off of social media other than printing, you know, tweeting the results. And then we reset and re-racked because 2 hours later, I'm like, but wait, we're not done yet. A few hours later, we go into back to traditional qualifying. So we turn the page. And so in P20 of the traditional qualifying, which of course at the grid for Sunday, P20, I'm saying it again, that was Logan Sargeant. P19, Yuki Tsunoda. Again, not a good day for the V-Carb team overall. P18, Lewis Hamilton. This was the shocker, especially given the result in the sprint. P17 was Kevin Magnussen. P16 was Zhou Guanyu. P15 was Pierre Gasly. P14 was Alex Albon. P13 was Esteban Ocon. P12, a little bit better here for the V-Carb team. That was Daniel Ricciardo. P11 was Lance Stroll. So P10 was Valtteri Bottas. Good showing for here in the Kick Sauber. P9, Nico Hülkenberg. P8, George Russell. P7, Carlos Sainz. P6, Charles Leclerc. P5, Oscar Piastri. P4 was Lando Norris. P3, Fernando Alonso, rebounding from the sprint here. P2, Sergio Checo Perez. And in P1, it was dry, so therefore normal service resumed. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, 133.660. Slower than we definitely all thought. Well, that's due to the surface, but we'll get into all that in just a little bit. All right, Cody, big thoughts from the regular qualifying session.
I thought it was very impressive that Valtteri Bottas squeezed into P10 for this. And as we'll get into in a little bit here, he ended up having what was going to be probably a pretty decent race as well. So it was nice to see him squeeze in there, even in front of him, Nico Hülkenberg. So, you know, seeing some of those, you know, we call them, you know, the back five, or you hear, you know, a lot of, you know, other podcasts calling it like Formula B. It's good to see that those guys are squeaking into Q3. But yeah, pretty much, like you said, it got dry and it went right back to run of the mill. You got Max Verstappen, Sergio Perez closing out the front row. Fernando Alonso, though, you know, very impressive qualifying performance. I thought maybe for a minute there he was going to be on the front row. It was really funny there at the end of Q3 there, because you had who was the one that started all off? Maybe it was Sainz or Leclerc, but like someone was like, they took P1 and the announcers were getting really excited, and then they were overturned by like Piastri, and then they were getting all excited again. And it just kind of kept tumbling. You know, Lando Norris took it, then Alonso took it.
It was literally the reverse of what ended up happening. It was like Piastri would take P2, then Norris would take P2, and Alonso would take P2. Then came the two Red Bulls. Perez took P2, and then Verstappen didn't even need to improve, but he did.
It was just really funny seeing that tumble, though, and being like, who's going to actually be on the front row for this?
And the deltas are actually, you know, other than Max, the P2 to P5 delta is, what, 0.3?
Very slim, yeah.
Which is just kind of what we've been saying, that, you know, in one lap pace, all these cars, it's milliseconds, it's minute little things here and there. Characteristics, you catch the sun on a lap and the track degree goes up half a degree and that helps you or it hurts you or it helps somebody else, or the wind does something, or you don't catch the puff of wind or you do catch the puff of wind. That's basically what I think happened to Lewis Hamilton. He caught himself a very big puff of wind that cost him his lap time on his second flyer in Q1, and he's unable to get out of Q1 because of it. So a great sprint quali, a great sprint race for him. And then it's all kind of undone in just the course of a couple laps there. So I guess this is kind of what we wanted in the course of a sprint weekend. So we've got some variability, but also I thought it was nice that, you know, if you made mistakes in the first sprint quali, you could still recover your weekend. So I think this, I'm digging kind of, I'm seeing what this format's doing. It's kind of making sense to me. If we're going to do this, we might as well do it this way. One bit of news before we actually turn the page to the race. So we didn't talk about this, but Carlos Sainz, we do have to talk about Mr. Carlos Sainz. He did the same Lando move that Lando got the lap deleted for, except he went a little bit further. And he also went a little bit around. And he brought out a red flag because he spun himself across the track, hits the front wing on the opposite side wall, car goes stop, red flag comes out. You're assuming that's session done for him. Here comes the crane. They're going to have to take the car up. But no, he does get going again, minus his front wing, obviously, but he does manage to work himself all the way around under red flag and get back to the pits. He does. He was then able, because they, you know, they could change the front wing out, able to then go back out once the track went green and complete the rest of the session. So I think he would have finished P15 because it was Q2 at the time. Instead, he finishes P7 here. Various racing series have had different thoughts about what happens if you're the cause of the red flag. Now, you can also argue that the red flag came out a little bit quick here. We'll talk about other things not coming out quite so quick in the race. But here, the red flag was pretty instantaneous. The spin happened. They red flagged it. So I guess, Cody, I'll just ask you your opinion on this. Were you okay with Sainz being able to continue after causing the red flag?
Yeah, I would say so. He under his own power, he got around. They fixed the car. If his car had been more damaged, it would have been self-penalizing for going around and destroying the car and not being able to finish up qualifying. But it wasn't that bad. The causing the red flag issue gets kind of fuzzy. Because in this case, yes, he brought out the red flag by spinning. It was not a session-ending red flag, though. And, you know, he was able to get the car repaired and be able to go out and continue qualifying. I think that's fair. I think it's a different situation than what we've seen in the past where, you know, for instance, like Sergio Perez was on pole at Monaco and then crashed and brought out a session-ending red flag that benefited him, or where Leclerc, you know, obviously not on purpose or anything like that, but same thing, also at Monaco, was on pole, crashed, brought out the red flag, benefited him. You know, this is a little bit of a different type of situation.
The Rosberg thing in Monaco where he just, you know, oh, look, here's an escape road. That's the best example of that.
Mm-hmm. So I think it was fair to let him go out and continue trying to qualify.
Fair enough. Aston Martin would not have agreed with you. Aston Martin actually appealed that ruling and said that because Carlos Sainz brought out the red flag, he should not be allowed to continue in the session. The FIA, however, agreed with you, Cody, on that one. They said, look, we've had this precedent in other places where drivers who were able to continue on their own, unabated, which is unaffected, there was not a marshal that ever touched the car. He was able to restart the engine on his own volition, and he was able to maintain red flag delta all the way around the lap. He had to go the whole way around because it happened at the start-finish line and made it back to the pits unhelped by anything. So I can see that argument. The good news was there was enough time on the clock where nobody really got messed up or screwed because of it. Everybody was able to then complete the next round of times, and the second flyers all counted the way that they would have expected them to. IndyCar makes kind of an interesting rule distinction here where, like, they say if you catch the red flag, you are impounded for 5 minutes. That would have meant Carlos Sainz could not have continued there. So that would have been something. Or I think the other rule is if it's a qualifying session, I think that's the practice rule where they keep you in the pits for 5 minutes. The qualifying rule is I think you lose your fastest two lap times. So Sainz would have had to make three flying laps to even get a time on the board there. So it's a tough thing. It's kind of a gray area. I'm buying what the FIA, I get what the rule is that the FIA had, and I understand it. I also see Aston Martin's thought of, hey, if you cause a red flag, there should be some sort of a penalty for that. But maybe in 90% of cases, it's usually self-penalizing and nobody cares. But this is one of those odd situations where, hey, at least he's able to keep going. I'm always in favor of giving another shot to the same driver if they can get back out, just as general rule. I think that's competitive. That's the part of the sport. That's what makes it kind of great. I mean, one of my best moments of MotoGP ever is watching Marc Marquez literally hop off his one bike at Circuit of the Americas and go over the wall to get on his backup bike to get back out to go qualifying and then put it on pole. You don't have moments like that if you take him away. So I guess I'm in your camp here. All right. Nice. So that was kind of the big note. We talked a little bit about what happened to Lewis. And again, now Lando's back to being good again because he's P4 on the grid, and I'm feeling okay again. But now we're all worried. If you're a McLaren fan, we're like, we're great. But the race pace looked god-awful, so we think it's not going to go so well. Until we turn the page to Sunday, and we will start, as we are apt to do, with those back markers. We had 3 DNFs in the traditional race. That was Valtteri Bottas. You said that he was having a good weekend, and he was, and then he wasn't. He gets the dreaded DNF. Yuki Tsunoda, because of the Bottas failure as a kind of a collateral, not because of that, but literally when they got going again after that, got caught in a after safety car kerfuffle, and he gets a DNF. And Daniel Ricciardo, dude has had no luck, if anything, this year. He got his new chassis. He was all excited about it. He probably wasn't having a bad race. And then Lance Stroll happened, and we'll have to talk about that. But he gets the other dreaded DNF. Classified finishers, P17, Logan Sargeant. P16 was Kevin Magnussen. He also had a puncture and a bad kind of rough day, although he had a hell of a nice fight with Lance Stroll. That was fun. For P15, that's where he finished. P14 was Zhao Guanyu, unable to get points, the local boy, but they did something very nice for him in the post-race. And P13 was Pierre Gasly. A little bit better for Alpine here, as we'll talk a bit. Maybe they heard you, Cody. You threw him in the bin last time, and maybe they heard you just a little bit. But thoughts here on the backmarkers?
I'm going to keep throwing them in the bin until they score points, which they did not do, even though it was better. A lot of things to talk about here with the backmarkers. Like we were saying for Valtteri Bottas, I thought he was actually going to be getting some points, like possibly finishing P10. He was looking pretty good, pretty strong throughout the whole weekend. And then, yeah, his car, engine gave out on him. And that led to a little bit of a weird situation where he was, stopped in the runoff area past a turn, and they're just waving yellow flags for sectors 2 and 3, I believe. And they just kept the yellow flags. And he's sitting there like getting out of the car, and we're all wondering like, I don't know if yellow flags is really enough. And then they put out the virtual safety car, and they're keeping the virtual safety car out, and everyone's going around at their Delta. And you could see that they were really struggling to try to move the car off the track, because it seemed that the car was still in gear, stuck in gear after the failure. And that was the way that Valtteri Bottas left it. So you had that funny shot where you have like half a dozen
seven guys more, in the back all trying to push the car.
Trying to shove the car off the track, and it wasn't budging. And then finally, after what seemed like forever, they finally made it a full safety car. And there was a little bit of worry during that safety car period that Lando had maybe missed out on his opportunity to get a better pit stop, or maybe that happened during the virtual.
That was the virtual safety car sequence. So the way that I saw it is Valtteri goes off. He actually went off like literally as the camera was panning to him. So he couldn't have done it any better on TV had he tried. You see the failure. The car goes off. You kind of know where everybody is. They showed the graphic of now, like the dots going around the track, which I thought in that case was actually very helpful. And you could kind of tell the rest of the field goes by, and there's a gap. There's a good like 20, 30 second gap between the end of the pack and now Max and Lando in P1 and P2 coming around. So I wasn't upset at first, where I'm like, okay, they're waiting. They're going to see if Valtteri can get going again. He's on the radio saying he can't. The next shot I see is the shot that actually angered me. And I actually went back and watched this a second time because I didn't actually believe it the first time I saw it. But Valtteri gets out of the car. He's standing, putting his wheel back in the car, and it's still only a double yellow. And yeah, it's a double yellow, and that means slow down and be prepared to stop. But God damn it, I'm screaming Jules Bianchi in my mind again. Because this is now, it didn't have the extreme weather. It didn't have a lot of the other elements that race had. There were a lot of failures in that race. But this is the exact same scenario. And all it takes is somebody else's engine to go, or a brake to fail, or who knows what. Somebody trying to get back on the power to get back into the next sector, get back in the race. And he spins out, and Lord only knows what potentially could happen. So they finally throw the VSC, but in the meantime, Max had gone past it, and now Lando had gone past it. And Lando's radio was actually quite hilarious, because his engineer comes on, he goes, you see it, right? And Lando goes, you got to be effing kidding me, was actually what he said on the air. But and then he kind of, you know, goes around. But then you watch, you have now the marshals are now out. It's definitely a VSC situation. They're trying to clear the car. They can't. Nobody's going for the emergency gear switch thing, which I kept looking for. And I'm screaming at the gear switch. And they can't do it. But they can't hear me because I'm here. So I don't know if they just didn't know, if it was inexperienced marshals. Look, it's the first time they've had a race in 5 years. You know, I'll give those guys a break. Those guys are volunteers. We can't go racing without them. I'm not blaming the marshals for that. But in the meantime, it allowed Lando to go around an entire VSC lap. Leclerc had pitted behind him. We thought that that was going to be the obvious benefactor of it. Lando gets his to change his tires under the VSC, and that kind of, you know, kills that. Then we go full safety car, and then everybody comes in. And that basically killed any of the strategy element for the rest of the race, because everybody's pretty much on the tire that they were going to use for the end. So good, bad, or indifferent, we ended up kind of getting what we got. I didn't like the timing. I wish they would have thrown something. The second Valtteri's feet hit the ground, that should be virtual safety car done, regardless of what it is. That's we got to be safe here. But that's my thoughts on that. But anyway. Yeah, kind of tough day for one Valtteri Bottas. Tougher day for Daniel Ricciardo, who he got punted off through no fault of his own. So this the Bottas safety car finally does get – they clear Bottas's car. They reset the field. Everybody's going to go racing again. And, you know, we're in that situation where the safety car is way out in front. Max is now the de facto safety car. He's controlling when everybody goes. He goes after – turn 15, but before turn 16. And meanwhile, what is it? Turn 14 is that hairpin. So most of like P5, 6, 7 are right in that hairpin. One Lance Stroll, not exactly looking. Well, Fernando Alonso locks up. So that was the first thing that happened. So he goes kind of wide in that hairpin. That causes everybody else to check up. And Lance Stroll, for whatever reason, wasn't paying attention to what everybody else was checking up for. He's looking off into the distance onto the racing line, trying to get the jump on the start, and plows literally right in the back of Daniel Ricciardo, lifts the car way up. Daniel's car then slides into the car in front of him. That happened to be Oscar Piastri. Now, it didn't look that bad on TV, but it turns out it was a lot worse for his car, and that wrecked basically his race. So, yeah, I mean, Lance Stroll, man. It's not funny anymore, man. This is, it just really isn't. But Cody, what's your thought on all that?
I thought it was definitely a poor performance from Lance Stroll. And yeah, Daniel Ricciardo just getting some awful luck. Like this weekend, he looked like he was the stronger of the two RB drivers. He was out qualifying Yuki Tsunoda. He was performing better than in the race. We thought maybe we'd get a little bit of bounce back from Danny Rick, and he'd, you know, maybe get some confidence back. But yeah, during that whole thing, and you know, playing devil's advocate just a little bit for a minute, yeah, Alonso locked up, and there was a big squeeze of all the cars that were right behind him. You know, kind of like people slamming on the brakes in front of traffic. You know, when you're in rush hour, but. You can see on all the onboards that he did have a pretty good gap between him and Ricciardo in front of him. I don't think there was that much of a gap between the cars that were behind Alonso, yet they managed to stop in time. You know, it looked for a brief moment like, oh, Danny Rick got really close to the back of Piastri, but he didn't hit him. And yet Stroll had a lot more gap there. And yeah, just full on plows into the back of Daniel Ricciardo's car so hard that it popped him off the ground, ran him into the back of Piastri's car. Ricciardo was pretty much screwed on the spot. And I kind of thought it was a little painful, too, to hear the radio from Lance Stroll. He had the gall to be like, yeah, these guys slammed on the brakes in front of me. It's totally their fault, not me at all. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. You know, it's... You got to at least take a little bit of blame for that. Like, you're the guy who did it. Like, you know, own up to it instead of just bitching and complaining that oh yeah, like it's everyone's fault but my own. And yeah, it was painful.
I mean, and then I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but Daniel Ricciardo's post race takes a lot to make him mad. He was mad. If you're one Lance Stroll, I would stay clear of the green of the V-carb garage for the next race, because Danny Rick might be just looking for you, and the Honey Badger, who doesn't take his claws out very often, might just want to do that, because he was very upset when he found out that Stroll was like blaming him for that. So that did not go over very well. I don't know where that sits as of now, but yeesh. But yeah, I mean, yeah, tough luck. And I think you were right. He had been getting the better of Yuki Tsunoda throughout most of the sessions. It looked like the new chassis was working for him. He had been asking for that, and Red Bull and V-Carb gave it to him. So, yeah, kind of an unfortunate ending for that. And it, as we'll get to it, it totally screwed Oscar's race, you know, mm-hmm. who had gotten kind of bailed out on the strategy and looked like he was in a pretty fast car and maybe he was going to, you know, make some hay. But at least he still manages to gut it out. And like I said, when we get to the midfield, and which we'll just, why don't we just do that right now? That's a perfect segue. We'll leave the rest of the back markers here, and we'll go on. So P12 was Alex Albon. P11 was Esteban Ocon. Alpine almost in the points, but not quite. P10 was Nico Hülkenberg. P9 was Lewis Hamilton. P8 was Oscar Piastri. P7 was Fernando Alonso. P6, George Russell. P5, Carlos Sainz. And P4, Charles Leclerc. This is the first race of 2024 without a Ferrari on the podium. Cody, I think that's as good a place to start as any. So what'd you see from the Ferraris? Just not a whole lot of race pace.
No, they definitely weren't showing themselves, at least in this race, compared to Lando Norris. They did not look like they were the second best. Well, I guess you could say that they maybe were the second best car, debatably, and maybe Lando was just driving the pants off his car because the Ferraris were still in front of Piastri by some margin. You know, I think even before he had his diffuser mucked with. But yeah, they definitely didn't look as close to the Red Bulls as, you know, maybe we were getting an impression of from some of the previous races. It was, not the best showing from them. It was a bit of an interesting, it was playing out to be some interesting strategy from them, because it looked like they were planning on doing one stop for Leclerc for a while. And then ended up getting kind of thrown out the window by the whole safety car thing. But they looked like they were going to be playing around with strategy. He ended up having the better performance out of the two of them pretty much through the weekend, which I think this is the first race this year that had both drivers in it that Leclerc outperformed Sainz. So, pretty strong performance from him there. He's still getting really good points out of it. You know, Leclerc's had a pretty consistent performance, at least throughout the first five races. I hope that it's just kind of a one-off thing. Maybe this track didn't suit them as well as some of the others. And I'm really hoping that, for the races we're going to in the future here, that it'll be back to a closer, performance gap, because, you know, nobody likes it just seeing the one team running out in front all the time. We were all getting our hopes up.
Well, and I tend to agree. I mean, I think you had the strange surface that, you know, nobody knew about, including Pirelli, which is kind of a other sub story, by the way. You had the changing weather conditions, and yeah, I think that just maybe the topography of this track just didn't necessarily suit the cars. And if their off weekend is P4 and P5, that still means they're still probably pretty good. So, I mean, yeah, they're not on the podium here. Yes, they couldn't close to Perez or Norris here, but I think if you're a Ferrari fan, this isn't time to hit the panic button. I think this is more of a one-off. The only thing that would make me hit the panic button is if you have Carlos Sainz trying to, you know, get his elbows out a little bit more against his teammate. If his teammate's not ready for it, maybe now Leclerc is ready for it. So, but that's really the only thing that I see. I didn't see them do necessarily anything wrong. I thought the strategy to what Leclerc was doing to take the shot at the one stop was probably, I think, the right move. And we never got to see how any of that played out because of the timing of the safety cars. So that pretty much killed the strategy element of what we were going to see there. Good recovery drive for Lewis Hamilton, P18 to P9. I'd say he got kind of lucky with the safety car. So he was probably the biggest benefactor. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, he definitely lucked out a little bit with that. And just overall, as you said, a good recovery drive. It was a little weird that he was starting so far back in the first place, especially after that strong performance of in the sprint, seeing him go from P2 in the sprint to P18 and qualifying to P9 during the race. You know, you look at that as a good recovery drive, but still Lewis Hamilton down in, you know, P9, he has not had particularly great race finishes throughout these first five races, and it's pretty far down in the points for it. It's like a really off year for him, and you know, I'm sure there's so many things factoring into that. In fact, he's going to a different team next year. No matter how much he says that he's not thinking about that, I'm sure he is deep down. And yeah, the Mercedes car, despite being better than last year's car, is still pretty far behind a lot of the other cars that are out there. And that, you know, that's gotta be frustrating for him to have to drive that. He was making many complaints about the car over the radio throughout the race, being like, man, these tires are slow. I think they started him off on,
he was on the softs,
or they had him on the softs at some point. Yeah. And he really didn't like that. Having a hard time coming to grips with the car. So, but I, you know, was there watching the whole season, every race, 2021, and that action between Lewis and Max was fantastic. So please give him a good Ferrari car so we can have that back.
I think they're going to try to oblige you on that. That would be my guess. One guy who did actually like the soft tires, and this was actually an interesting strategic move, Fernando Alonso and the Aston Martin. When everybody else went to the hard tire at the end, he went to the soft tire and made the racy strategy work with some really fun moves at the end. And he almost pulled himself a Carlos Sainz, but he saved it. And oh my gosh, what a save, especially late. So, you know, you give that guy a sniff at it, doing some moves. The guy still got his moves, man. There's no doubt about that one. He's exciting, if nothing else.
That save was awesome. And it was like he didn't even miss a beat. He just like he had the scare and he just kept going and like still made the pass like pretty soon after. So I was like, oh, yep, whoops. Let's just keep going, which was fantastic. I did think it was a little bit of a weird strategy. I'm not entirely sure that he really gained too much from having done it other than having to put in a lot of work and at least giving us some excitement in the closing stages of the race, which, you know, I guess that's that counts for just as much as anything, keeping it interesting and just making his fandom that much stronger. But overall pretty strong performance from Fernando Alonso this weekend, I would say, despite you know, where he was finishing in the sprint. You know, he was right up there until the end. Hoping to see more from him.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. It was definitely some spicy moves. I thought he made some very sweet passes. We talked about the save. You know, he makes that save and then he literally goes down into the same turn, turn one, and puts the move on Hamilton anyway. So, you give that. I keep saying you give that guy a sniff. If they manage to give that guy a real competitive car. He's not too old yet. Nothing tells me that guy's too old yet. He's still definitely got the wheel talent, but, we'll move into the podium now. And the podium saw Sergio Checo Perez home in P3, P2, Lando Norris. Hey, he's good again. Look at that. And in P1, however, Thanos, the inevitable, 13 seconds clear. Just a Sunday drive at the office for old Max there.
Yeah, there was not even safety cars, weird things happening, you know, with changes in pit strategy. None of it was going to change that. He nailed, you know, the restart and everything. And once the only thing that happened was his race gap wasn't as astoundingly huge at the end, like we were all expecting it to be. But yeah, he looked pretty much unstoppable this race. Everyone was pretty much figuring he had that one in the bag, but at least we have the excitement of Lando Norris being on the podium. He looked really good throughout the entire race as well. He was holding his own perfectly well. Unfortunately, never looked like he really had it on for the win unless something happened to Max's car. But even still, in the closing stages of the race, there was some wonder as to whether Sergio Perez was going to be able to catch up to him and take P2. It looked like he was closing the gap a little bit at first, but then I don't know if tires fell off or what, but yeah, couldn't close that gap, not even really close by the end of the race. So yeah, outstanding drive from Lando, and yeah, a good drive from Perez as well, able to clean up that last podium spot for getting two podiums for Red Bull. He's, you know, despite not having a race win yet this year, he is doing pretty much everything I think Red Bull expects of him, getting the podiums where he can, getting really good points. In fact, you know, hoping to see this consistency continue throughout the rest of the season. And if it does, I think he's probably going to be able to keep that seat if he wants it. You know, knocking on wood here. Don't want to jinx him.
It is still early in the season, and we haven't gone through most of Europe yet. But it is looking good, I think, for Sergio Perez. P3, nothing to complain about there. The thing that happened with Lando late there, the gap was holding around 5 seconds. He has a lockup going into the hairpin, and that brought it down to 3.5 or so seconds. And it was the next three laps after that that secured Lando his P2, because he re-upped his pace. He used whatever he had in the tire pretty much. I think the laps were 39.1, 39.3, 39.4, and Perez's laps were like 39.6, 39.8. And it basically just stretched the gap back out. So right when he needed lap time, he could get it. Just made it look like the uber importance, at least for McLaren here, was track position and semi-clean air. If they got caught, obviously in the sprint where Oscar was, it was very hard to make moves, very hard to overtake. Your cat agrees with that, I would surmise there. Lando, being now up in P4, had a really nice move on Fernando Alonso early that got him into P3. Because of the weirdness with the virtual safety car, then the full safety car, and all the shuffling there, he gets into P2. And because with Max being so far gone so quickly, Lando's in clean air. So, you know, he was actually able to benefit from that, maintain his pace. He thought, you know, he's coming on the radio and he sounded as surprised as anybody. He goes, guys, our pace here is really good. We're racing Ferrari. Let's go. And I was so glad to hear him say that, because so many times, you know, this season I've heard them like, we're racing the Mercedeses and we're not even going to bother with the Ferraris. And I'm like, no, you at least got to put a shot and see if you can maybe take one of them. Here they were obviously able to do that, at least with Lando. Now, we never got to see what Oscar could have done or would have done because of the damage, but it was encouraging on a track again, where they came out on the Monday and said, well, we're going to be damage limitation. We don't think we're going to be very good. Slow speed corners all around. Lando just said, screw it. I'm good. So, hey, you know, he was voted driver of the day, and I actually will agree with that. All right. And I don't really have anything else to say about Max, other than Red Bull in clean air, make car go really fast, and goodbye. And that was pretty much it. So really no real major issues. I was trying to conjure up some sort of a brake duct thing or something to maybe have the thing maybe die and give Lando a win. I was unsuccessful in that. There was that one radio transmission where he goes, I ran over debris, and I literally looked up when I heard that. I'm like, don't you tempt me. No way. No way. And there wasn't. He was fully in control. He was all fine. That was the only way he was going to lose that race. You know, then I'm thinking, you know, he pulls the Lewis Hamilton and he wins it on three tires because he's that fast. You know, he might just do that. But anyway, nobody touching Max here this weekend, especially in the dry. All right. So that is your Chinese Grand Prix in the books. We will take a quick break. We will recap where it shakes out with all of the standings after that. We will then get into the fan email segment. We've got some normal contributors. We've got some newer contributors, some good feedback from our listeners here. We'll hand out our awards. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about predictions. We keep doing things that are hard to do in the predictions. And we did another feat this weekend in the predictions. So come on back. You want to hear about all of that. So come on back. We'll get into all that in just a minute.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop. Grab your flu powder, broomstick, or apparate to your favorite audio streaming service to join the discussion on Hogwarts, a podcast, where Dan and his friends have in-depth chapter-by-chapter breakdowns of each Harry Potter novel. Join the group as they dive into the magical world and discuss plot points, analyze character development, and occasionally go off the rails. Whether you're a muggle who's new to the series or a pure-blood wizard who won't need a remember-all, Hogwarts, a podcast, brings everyone to the Great Hall for a magical discussion. Hogwarts, a podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. This is season 6. This is episode 12. It's now I've got that right this time. This is the 2024 Chinese Grand Prix Race Review Show. You've got Andy and I'm along with Cody tonight, and we just wrapped up the first sprint weekend of the season and all of the sessions and meetings they're in. So now we're going to take a look at where the points are at the end of this round. So, Cody, if you want to take the drivers, I will come in with the team standings.
Sounds great. In first place, we've got Max Verstappen, which is, you know, going to be the story probably for a while now. First place for Red Bull. He is now a full race win clear of Sergio Perez in second place in the other Red Bull. So Max has 110 points. Sergio Perez with 85. Third place, Charles Leclerc in Ferrari with 76 points. And just behind him, despite missing a race, Carlos Sainz in the other Ferrari with 69 points. Lando Norris making a pretty good haul this weekend. He's in fifth place for McLaren with 58 points. And his teammate Oscar Piastri is in sixth with 38. So it's a pretty close run between 6th, 7th, and 8th. We've got George Russell in 7th for Mercedes with 33 points, and I would say he had probably the most incognito performance in this last race. Didn't hear anything about him, but he finished in 6th, so he had a decent race. Fernando Alonso in 8th place for Aston Martin. He had an exciting race this weekend, and he is with 31 points. Lewis Hamilton, as we've discussed, having a bit of a rough go of it so far this year. He's all the way down in 9th place in that other Mercedes with only 19 points for the moment. And then 10th place, Lance Stroll in the other Aston Martin car with 9 points. So those top 5 teams holding on to all 10 positions in the driver's standings as of now.
Yep, and the teams are pretty much the same reflection. Red Bull Racing Powertrains, they are way out in front. They are up to 195 points, and we're only 5 rounds in. Ferrari, they check in with 151 points. Third place, McLaren, they are up to 96 points thanks to Lando's big haul of points this weekend. They open up a very large now gap on Mercedes in P4 with 52. P5 is Aston Martin, and the Mercedes are now clear of the Aston Martins by 12 points. Aston Martin checks in with 40. P6, the VCARB team, they check in with 7 points. Haas, Ferrari, P7, 5 points in 5 races. So that might be a trend, so good for them. P8 is Williams, Mercedes. They check in with the 0 points. P9, they are the bottom rung no longer, thanks to Esteban Ocon's P11. Alpine, out of the basement. They are checking with P9. However, they still have 0 points. And P10, somebody has to be there, apparently. The Kick Saubers, Valtteri Bottas, would have probably had Kick Sauber out of that position, but that was not to be. So they check in P10 with 0 points. All right. So that's our take on the weekend. We will now open it up to your takes on what you saw this weekend. The fan email segment, she was right on the dot. Rachel Fleming, you can set your watch to her, man. love it. She got in right on the wire there. It was 3 in the morning here. It's probably 9 a.m. in the UK. So this is probably no problem for her. But thanks, Rachel, for a great add-in as always. So, Cody, it's your time to shine. What does Rachel have to say?
All right. Thank you, Rachel, for your email. And she says, saw another Another race, another Max victory. I mean, there was there any doubt at all? Fair play to Lando for getting in between the Red Bulls. That would have stung the team. I decided to watch Fernando Alonso on the driver tracker after he pitted for the mediums, and my God, was he incredible. He nearly lost it at one point. Yes, he did, but he managed to save it. All I want now is Aston Martin to pay Adrian Newey all the money in the world to get him to Aston and give Fernando a winning car. He deserves it. Don't we all wish for that? I think that would be the story of the decade for Formula One. However, K-Mag deserved a much harsher punishment than a 10-second penalty. I felt slightly bad for Lance Stroll because it was slightly tight about what happened when he went into the back of Danny Ric. However, K-Mag's dreadful dive bomb on Yuki was ridiculous and deserved a drive-through penalty. But with incidents like this and Ollie Bearman in the background, K-Mag's seat is becoming more under threat. And then she goes on to say, I would like to add an amendment. Stroll has just blamed Danny Ric. I no longer feel bad for Stroll. Stroll should have taken more care. Now the 10-second penalty is justified. I love that amendment.
Well, yeah, I mean, you almost had – I almost had the same reaction. I'm like, well – maybe that's just kind of a thing. And then you look at Lance's onboard and he's clearly looking to the right. He's clearly not looking at the guy in front of him. He's trying to set up for what he thinks is going to be some sort of a miracle dive bomb move either on the straight or into turn one. And he wasn't paying attention to what he was doing. And then he has the gall to go in and try to blame everybody else for a problem that he caused. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you there, Rachel. You know, I mean, we've talked a little bit about K-Mag. I mean, Nico Hülkenberg is putting that Haas in places. Maybe it doesn't deserve to be there, but maybe it kind of does. That might be where the absolute limit of the car is. But K-Mag hasn't been anywhere this season. So I think you're right. Ollie Bearman just being around and being Ollie Bearman is going to put K-Mag's seat under pressure. I think Gunther Steiner was very loyal to K-Mag. I don't know that Ayo Kodomitsu has the same loyalty to K-Mag here. So, yeah, that could very well be part of the merry-go-round that might kick off at some point this season. So we'll keep out definitely watching for that. And then to your point about Fernando Alonso, my gosh, that was what a save. Any other driver, and I'll say this right now, even Max put Lando in there, put Lewis in there. I don't know how many other drivers save that. Carlos Sainz could not save it. And he's a really good driver.
Yeah.
And it was like the exact same situation. And you saw what happened there. So anybody else probably doesn't do that. But yeah, I keep saying you give that guy a sniff at anything. You watch him come alive. He's still got the moves. Whether you agree with the timing of his career choices in life and who he chooses to hang out with off the track sometimes, regardless, the guy's got talent. No doubt about that.
Yeah. As far as K-Mag goes, I will be actually a little sad when he is no longer in that seat. And I actually kind of wish K-Mag was in a better seat because despite the fact that, you know, he kind of seems penalty prone and, you know, perhaps incident prone and isn't competing quite as well as Hülkenberg this year, he is really fun to watch race. When he, like, is getting into it, like, he really races hard. And will defend his position really strongly. And I think it's really fun to watch. Like we were saying earlier that, you know, some of the best fighting in this race was between K-Mag and Lance Stroll for like one of the last positions that was running on the track. But it was really fun to watch. And he seems to do that a lot. So, yeah.
K-Mag's going to have an outstanding sports car career already waiting for him. Like him and IMSA. It feels like pee in a pod. So like, and we've already seen that and he's already done some really good stuff there. He just needs to kind of refine it. You know, he still might be able to rate. Well, I think his dad retired finally, but at one point it was going to be like a father son duo in the Corvette there. So yeah, look for that guy to like do a Le Mans run. Look at that guy to do some Daytona 24s. Yeah. Even if he's not in Formula One, he's not done as a driver by any stretch. Unfortunately, he might not be in the F1 merry-go-round, but still a hell of a personality, a heck of a nice guy off the track, and a hell of a competitor on it. So,
yeah definitely agree.
Unfortunate the way that's going to go, but I don't think he's done for sure.
Good. I hope not. Our next email comes in from The Formula, and they said, Not a bad race weekend overall, especially for Lando. Unfortunately, I had to watch the sprint race in Spanish because ESPN didn't upload any English versions on demand. This has happened numerous times before, unfortunately, so I need Outlap F1 to get an affiliate code with Rosetta Stone or Babbel so I can learn some Spanish. It's fantastic. Also unfortunate, but fantastic. Also, I just wanted to make it known how much I enjoy having Nico Rosberg on commentary. Every time he talks about a driver's error, I just hear "finish him" in a Mortal Kombat voice as he piles on the passive insults. Even Crofty was catching some Rosberg strays. I'm here for it. And if you're just listening, Mr. The Formula, I hope you know that I have a really big smile on my face because I got a genuine laugh out of me. So thank you very much.
In terms of this, the Spanish thing, one, I'm sorry. And two, mi español es muy mal and not practiced anymore. So my Spanish is very bad. And ESPN Deportes is as fun as it is. Other than adios pelota, I don't really know what else I can give you there. Yeah, I'm just very much out of context, even though I took 4 years of it in school. But my recommendation would be F1 TV. It's worth the $70. You don't have to deal with ESPN or cable or any of the BS that comes with it. Signing in or having extra accounts or any of that. F1 TV is, if you want Spanish commentary, it's there for you if you really would like that. But you get all the sessions. They upload literally within 5 minutes of the session going off the air. So they're great about that. They've actually they've done a really nice job of making that better. The platform works. My only complaint has been sometimes when the driver comms don't work, and then I usually tweet their help, and then they get on it, and they try to fix them, and usually 90% of the time they're fixed by the end of the race. So that would be a alternative for you there. We're going to talk about Nico Rosberg after our next comment, because you were in the pro Rosberg camp. Our next commenter is in the anti Rosberg camp. I was happy for Lando at the end of it. He just gave me the whole gamut of emotions. So one minute I'm up, the next minute I'm down, and then he's okay again. Then he was really great in the race. So, and who knows what to think about what McLaren's aspirations were here. And if he obviously exceeded them. Mm-hmm. Andrea Stella, even in the post-race interviews, was like, we don't know why we were so good, and we have to look at that because we would like to kind of, you know, replicate that. So I have a theory. My theory is I think the direction of the wind greatly affected that car. We talked about it in our preview that we were going to have wind coming from different directions and very gusty. In certain situations, I think especially in the sprint, the wind was coming from a different direction where it was coming from the whole rest of the weekend. And then in the race, it was coming from exactly almost 180 degrees to the opposite. So because of all of that, I think that helped the McLaren car out, obviously, honestly. And they were able to – it helped with the tire life and the tire dig. And meanwhile, the track got more and more rubbered in. That surface, you could clearly see where the racing line was by the end of the weekend, where you couldn't see that, especially at the start. There was definitely a different color to the track. So I think a combination of all that probably helped McLaren's fortunes here, and Lando especially because of it. And once he gets confidence, once he's confident in the car, you can see what this is the result. He was awesome.
Yeah, I agree. Lando he continues to surprise me. Like back when I started watching Formula One, or, you know, when he was just starting out, I wasn't really a believer in his abilities, but he's definitely shown over many seasons now that he definitely has what it takes, and that first win will come soon enough. Our next email comes from Jenny Donahue, and she says, and this cracked me up looking through the emails as well, the disparity here. She says, I don't know about what I saw, but we'll give thoughts on what I heard. Nico Rosberg in the commentary box with Crofty, never again. He was so unpleasant and came across as cocky, which is fitting, bothered and uninteresting, and no banter or quick wit. Never again, please. So some scathing remarks for Nico Rosberg, which, quite the disparity from the formula being like, yeah, sure, more Nico Rosberg, why not? I think I fall comfortably in the middle. I did think he has some, you know, interesting insight, having been, you know, a very successful driver in some quite modern machinery, you know, even more modern, well, just as modern as, you know, Jenson Button, who also does a lot of this commentary. And so he's got that good insight into, you know, up-to-date, you know, strategy and calls and perhaps what people are actually thinking versus what they're saying and what, you know, and that sort of thing. And I think that type of insight is very interesting to hear from him. I do see how he could maybe grit on your nerves a little bit, because he does kind of come across as like, I know a lot about this. I am the subject matter expert. And he's not afraid to disagree with other people's opinions. He did on the commentary disagree with a lot of Crofty's, you know, calls on things. You know, they had very differing opinions on, you know, things like penalty calls or, you know, what a driver might do or what they were thinking, if it was a good idea. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying it's definitely not everyone's cup of tea. And I'm not surprised if you did not enjoy his commentary, but I personally don't think it was that bad.
I think I am in the camp of, I would call Nico Rosberg, where he is as a commentator right now, still very much an acquired taste. You know, if you've decided you like him, he's the breath of fresh air and you like him, and that's totally fine. I find myself hating his delivery style. It sounds like the guy who's like laughing in the background and pointing, but then what he actually says a lot of times is exactly right. And that like angers me more, where it's like, I really didn't want to like you, but I can't disagree with you, type of thing. You know, and there's a lot of what he says that sometimes is like right on. Like, he said exactly that Lando screwed up in the sprint, and I didn't want to hear it because I was angry at the time, but I actually went back and listened to it. I'm like, well, but he said the right thing. He was right about it. And so as angry as I was and as upset as I was, and he was right there to call everybody on it. And you know, I feel so bad for Lando and all this other stuff. Well, yeah, I did too at that minute. But yeah, he's definitely, he has some working to do with getting in and out of, I don't know that he's ready to be a commentator. He's much better as the guy you bring in occasionally for a perspective, a one-on-one interview where somebody's kind of leading him down the line of questioning, I think is much better for him, at least right now. Now, that is a hard job to do. You can know whatever the hell you want to know about Formula One and not be the greatest of commentators or pundits out there. You know, that is not an easy job to do. And you usually have someone in your ear trying to tell you what to do. And, you know, you're trying to process that while trying to say something interesting and carry on a conversation. And, oh yeah, don't drop the microphone, you know, during all of that. So I respect him for doing it. I get that he's not necessarily everybody's cup of tea. There are times when he's not mine either, but he's going to be one of those like acquired tastes. If you actually just listen to the words and not who's saying it, the commentary is actually really good. Just the delivery style and the way he kind of looks at it, like, you know, he's kind of like laughing in the background at sometimes people, makes it annoying.
Yeah, I agree. He definitely has a bit of a delivery, and even my fiance noticed something was a little different, because during the commentary, she's like, who's that guy? He doesn't sound familiar. So even she can tell the difference in just, different commentaries throughout the race. Our next email, our last one, it looks like, comes from Andrea Hanna. And they said, Max Verstappen and Lando Norris, masterclass. Didn't expect McLaren to be ahead of Ferrari. Oscar's tire management is still a problem. But he'll get there. Aston with Alonso's weird strategy. But what is safe for him? That could have gone very wrong. We did talk about the spin, or almost spin, and how awesome a save that was. I do agree that I think the strategy was a little bit of an odd one. I didn't think, you know, going for the softs and pitting again for another tire set was really going to, or I can't, I'm getting it all mixed up now. Did you go on the softs first and the mediums? But he ended up doing quite a bit of pit stops, and then had to go very aggressive there at the end of the race to recover those positions. So I thought that was a little bit of a weird one. But you know, for what it's worth, he made it work for the most part. He did recover pretty well. I think I really, really want to be an Oscar Piastri fan. His personality off the track jives with me. He's very very dry, but also very funny. Has a pretty good sense of humor, and I really want to see him performing really well. But he does seem like there's still that pretty good gap to Lando in the races. Piastri can really nail it in sometimes in qualifying, but yeah, that race pace leaves a little bit to be desired. And you know, maybe he's still just trying to figure it out. There's you know, quite the finesse, I think, in preserving your tires, trying to squeeze the most you can out of them over a stint. And yeah, maybe he's still figuring that out, but he is very talented, has shown that in the Junior Formula Series, and I have all the confidence that he will improve and end up bringing a good fight to Lando in the future.
Yeah, pretty much. I think you said it right down the line there. Yeah, I mean, I am still very high on Oscar Piastri. The ceiling he's nowhere near his ceiling. And if you think that he's at his ceiling, you're not watching. You're not paying attention. There's still so much that he's learning. And this was a track that he had never been to. So, you know, a lot of people were kind of behind the eight ball. He was very much behind the eight ball here. And then you add in the funny surface, and then you add in the rain and the qualifying and all that stuff. I thought, you know, and he's still very, the other thing I'm realizing after now paying attention to his radio, he's very hard on himself too, in just a very different way. You know, Lando will kind of beat himself up and be demonstrative about it. Oscar will just come on the radio and go, yeah, look what happens when you don't fuck up turn one. look at what happens. I can actually put it together. So, I mean, but you know, they're very different personalities. They're very different types of drivers. He has a very experienced race engineer. He's got Jenson Button's engineer who coached him in all the years that he was at McLaren. You know, that dude has been doing that job for a very long time. I am positive that once the McLaren car gets a little bit less on the knife edge, and the other thing is Lando has got a lot more experience driving that car, as knife edgy as it is. And Lando there's been several articles that I know I've read that said that even Lando doesn't love how the car also handles, but he figured it out enough to, okay, if I compromise my style enough this way, I can still get lap time out of it. I can still get tire life out of it. I don't know that I've seen that art yet with Oscar, because he's still trying to figure out kind of what his driving style is. And then the car hasn't been there. So when we see some upgrades, when we see maybe the reg change, if he can get a car that suits him just a little bit, I think you're going to see his star start to shine really, really quick, because there's a ton of untapped potential for one Oscar Piastri. All right. So thank you, everybody, for a very engaging and lovely little debate there, especially about Nico Rosberg. I'm all there for it, both sides of that argument. So thank you, everybody, for contributing. And feel free to do so next time as well. All right. So we will now get into our awards. We'll start with the rubbish award. I think we have good consensus here. I'll go first. I'll take the lead here. And mine is just Lance Stroll. It's not funny anymore, man. I don't know. I see your teammate doing things in that car that you're clearly not able to do. And yeah, Fernando Alonso is a bit of a, you know, he's a one-off, not necessarily indicative, but this is not cool. Especially the attitude after the race. Like, that's the thing that just galls me. It's one thing to make the mistake, and all you would have had to do is say, you know what? I was looking off to the right. I was trying to make a move. It was an opportunity for me to get back in the race, and I made a mistake. Was it that hard to say that? Could you have just done that? And everything would have been fine. Mm-hmm. Instead, you go and you blame Daniel Ricciardo for getting hit in the back? Like, come on, man. Like I said, it's not funny anymore. And I'm just getting done with it. And so be better. Do better.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Thanks, Lance Stroll, for making it easy this week. My rubbish award goes to you. This is the reason why there's so many jokes about Lance Stroll only being in the seat because daddy owns the team. It's because his racecraft and attitude really don't seem to stack up to everyone else in the sport. If you're not going to be a great driver, I mean, there's a long history of paid drivers in Formula One. If you're not going to be a great driver, you can at least be a likable fellow to get people on your side. And you didn't earn yourself any points this weekend by, you know, not at least owning up to that you had at the very least some responsibility in this accident taking place. So, I really think the seat, you know, might be more deserving of another driver with a different skill set. But if you're going to be in the seat anyway, yeah, the least you could do is own up to your mistakes.
Well, here's my hot take, and you can book it right now, and maybe I'm going to be wrong on this. Aston Martin will not win a Constructors' Championship with Lance Stroll as one of its drivers. Full stop. That's what it's going to take. They can throw whatever money they want to at it. They are trying that. They are fighting that fight with one arm tied behind their back, and it's not going to happen until they realize that it's not going to happen. His dad's going to have to fire his son, and that's what it's going to have to be. He's going to have to decide, am I about winning? Or am I about being a good dad?
I think you can be both. I think you can be a good dad and still
by telling your kid, by telling him maybe this isn't for you anymore.
I think Fair enough. Can still acknowledge, like, Lance, you know, we need the very best in this car, and I am sorry, but you know, I don't think that this is for you. I don't think you're going to stack up enough. Like, I know it sounds awful for me trying to say it, coming up with it on the fly. I'm sure he could do a much better job of of carefully putting it that way. But yeah, I think you can do both. You can be a good dad and understand that for the team to succeed, it needs someone else in the seat. I would also say probably not even a really hot take to think that they're not going to win a Constructors with him, because it's just, I agree with you. Like, even if Alonso is performing to the quality of competing for the drivers' championship, we haven't seen really from any season that, you know, Lance Stroll is going to really stack up as enough of a second driver to score the points when needed, I guess.
Yeah. Full agree. All right. So we will move on to our analysis paralysis. Cody, I'll let you go first on this one. What you got?
For this one, I went with Alonso's race strategy, just because I did think it was a little out there. And I didn't really feel like there was anyone who had a particularly awful strategy this race. It was a little interesting with the Ferrari camp considering a one stop, and Leclerc coming on the radio at some points being like, are you sure? But yeah, I think the Alonso having to make him take that other pit stop just to, you know, recover the positions at the end. I didn't think it was going to put him really any farther ahead than he already was. Alonso's race strategy gets my analysis paralysis.
All right. Very good there. My analysis paralysis goes out to our friends at the FIA for the race direction. And I don't know what they were looking at, but the decision not to throw a VSC or a safety car when Valtteri Bottas is out of the car with his feet on the ground, you are asking for trouble. That is all you're asking for. Double yellow flags in that situation. I'm sorry. That's not enough. We have so much data that says it's not enough. That's why the virtual safety car exists, for exactly that situation. The second the feet hit the ground, that should be an automatic call. Shouldn't even be anybody having to push a button. It should just happen. You know, once the camera sees it, I mean, we got AI now. I mean, we think we should be able to figure this out. That drove me crazy. And then yeah, you know, either the radio didn't work to the marshals, or the marshals didn't realize, hey, there's the pop it out of gear button. And then you got to throw a full safety car, which completely threw whatever strategy you had completely out the window. So this is the definition of analysis paralysis. They literally watched something happen, got paralyzed, and didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So FIA, this goes out to you. All right, so we'll move on. We'll move on to our Dark Horse Award of the weekend. Cody, I like your thought here. What you got?
So my Dark Horse Award doesn't go for the race performance, but it does go for the sprint performance. My Dark Horse Award is going to go to Lewis Hamilton because after all of the pretty lackluster performances that we've had up until now, it was really awesome to see him have a great sprint qualifying and a great sprint performance, getting that P2. It was a little disappointing to see that it didn't carry over to the full Grand Prix, but it was really good to see him racing near the front and scoring some good points in the sprint. So hope Lewis can take this success and start bringing it to some of the Grand Prix coming forward.
All right, very good. Mine is going to go out to Nico Hülkenberg. Basically for being a pest to the top five teams pretty much all weekend. At one point, I think in the race, he was even up to P7. He was in front of both Ferraris after the start. So, and a guy who I didn't think had a whole lot left. Here's another one. Old still might be good, and maybe you put Nico Hülkenberg in that category. Because look at what he's doing with a Haas. It seems like they've kind of gone back to their roots a little bit under Ayo Kodomatsu. And they're doing those odd Haas things again, and it's working for them. Hey, 5 points in five races. Way to go. An honorable mention a bit to Oscar Piastri for gutting it out after the damage. Listening to the radio, he literally comes on the radio and goes, guys, how much damage do I have? And they told him it was like the equivalent of going three clicks down on the front wing, which is a huge adjustment. So he was losing pace, and yeah, he wasn't able to hold it against Alonso, but still to bring it home in the points. I think if he was not in the points, I think McLaren probably retire that car, but you keep it in the points as long as you can, and he got it home. So good on you, Oscar. I was impressed by that. So not the flashiest of results, but a good result nonetheless there. All right. So we'll move on to our driver of the day. I'll take this one first. My boy, Lando Norris, for literally giving me the entire gamut of emotions all weekend, up and down and up and down, but ending on a high, P2, nice champagne slam. Didn't break the trophy this time. I guess it's with odd-looking trophies. I guess you can kind of wear it like a neck thing. I saw several of that. Looks like a giant ring, so maybe they'll have to throw it into the volcano at some point. But anyway, Cody, what you got?
I am in agreement with you. Driver of the day is Lando Norris. I think anytime you get a driver who's going to be splitting the Red Bull drivers, they're going to be a top contender for driver of the day. Lando made that McLaren look awesome this weekend, much to everyone's surprise. Even McLaren didn't think that they were going to perform that well, but I don't think that they told Lando. I think he just was like, oh yeah, it's going to be great. We can definitely make something out of this. And he did. So, excellent performance from him. Definitely worthy of the driver of the day vote.
All right. Very good there. All right. So we will now, before we hop on out, we will get into our predictions, and we've done something again for the first time this season. We've tied. We each end the weekend with 6 points. Cody, you got the pole sitter. You got the fastest in air quote quali time, even though we were both I was 7 seconds off. You were 5 seconds off. So you were closer there. You did get P1 on the podium. You got, again, in air quotes, the fastest lap time because we were both way off again on that. Not surprising. It's just what Outlap F1 does. It's just what we do. You got the prop bet. Zhao did not make Q3. And you got P1 on the sprint podium. I got 6 points on the weekend. I got the pole sitter for Max. I got P1 on the podium for Max. I got the P6 bonus for George Russell. I got the P8 bonus for Oscar Piastri. I got the prop bet as well. And I also got P1 on the sprint podium. So we split this weekend, 50/50. Good going. But that's still an impressive score. 6 points for each of us is pretty darn good, especially considering it's a track we hadn't been to in a long time. Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess that brings us to the end of the China recap. We'll put this weekend in the rearview mirror. We'll take a week off. And then we will get geared up. It's time. The fake lake is waiting. Pomp and circumstances, the celebrities, the weird driver intros. We're all here for it. It is. That's right. It's the Miami Grand Prix. It is upon us. So in 2 weeks' time, that's where we'll be. Cody, any final thoughts? Any thoughts on Miami or anything else before we hop out?
Yeah, I'd say I got two. First one is I would not mind seeing more incidences of what we saw for Joe Gwynt and you at this race. It was really cool to see him get some special attention, especially at the end of the race. You could really tell that it meant a lot to him to finally be able to partake in his home Grand Prix after it's been away for a bunch of years. So I think it would be really cool in Grand Prix going forward. It wouldn't make sense to do so to, you know, give some special attention to drivers that are racing at their home Grand Prix. It was kind of fun, and it just really goes to show how much that means to them. My other final thought is, yep, we're going to Miami. My least favorite of the United States Grand Prix. Who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be a banger. But I think for all the Miami Grand Prix that we've seen so far, I hate to say it, I think they tend to be a little boring. So I'm really hoping I'm wrong. I'm going to, you know, be wondering if it's going to be a poor Grand Prix and being really jealous of the warm weather and being right by the ocean. So maybe I'm just being a little grumpy about it, but hopefully I'm wrong.
I just have to remember it's really, really humid and really, really muggy, and none of us like that. I'm remembering, just remember baking out there at COTA last year and then adding 20% more humidity to that. Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. But look, I mean, we have this race. It's part of the US 3. Might as well embrace it and get into it. We will do all of that in about a week and a half's time. We will preview it. It's another sprint weekend. So, you know, we'll have meaningful sessions throughout the course of the weekend once again. And I've heard I've heard that McLaren are bringing their updates forward. So that will keep my interest tuned for that. See how that works. It's a good track for them to do it at, because there's that one section that usually always kills them. If they can make that a little bit better, that will definitely help them here. But yeah, so we'll get into that. Also hoping Deanna has now landed and hopefully is home safe by now. So yeah, all good there. And hopefully it might even be all three of us next time out. But stay tuned. I don't have any updates on our special thing that we're still working on. That's still hopefully in the, you know, fingers crossed that we can get that across the line. If something does break out and we're able to do that within the next week or so, again, stay tuned to our social media. We'll before we drop that, we'll kind of give you guys a heads up to let you know that it's coming. But I haven't been able to get in contact with my contact there. But yeah, it's going to be really fun if we're able to do that. So again, for Cody, for Deanna, for everybody connected to the show, we love doing this. This has been a whole lot of fun. Be safe. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlapF1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.